It seemed clear to some within ExxonMobil and on the board that for all of Raymond's achievements in financial management and corporate strategy, his Dick Cheney-like bluntness had become a liability. Worldwide scientific and engineering talent recruitment and retention, as well as lobbying strategy in Europe, and the prospect of a post-Cheney Washington, all argued for a leader of ExxonMobil after Raymond who could maintain the same level of financial and operational discipline, but project a gentler, quieter, more modern and inclusive voice. It was not obvious which of the two finalists would be the better communicator. Galante had grown up in Queens, New York, and on the south shore of Long Island. As he rose, he managed Exxon's massive Baton Rouge refinery and later served as Raymond's executive assistant in the years after the Exxon Valdez disaster. The most thankless job in the world, as a former Exxon executive put it, in part because as the chief operations officer on Raymond's staff, Galante had to decide when to wake up the boss with news in the middle of the night. "Sometimes it's not much fun to wake Lee up at 4 a.m., the former executive noted. As the succession contest solidified, Raymond appointed Galante to run the corporation's worldwide downstream portfolio, massive refineries from China to the Middle East to the American South. Some visitors found Galante to be affable, outgoing, and comfortable in comparison with his rival, Tillerson. A Fortune reporter, Nelson D. Schwartz, went so far as to offer ExxonMobil directors advice in print as they approached their decision. "If either of the candidates to succeed Raymond can address the company's tattered image, it's Galante." Tillerson drawled unabashedly. He was a lifelong Texan bred in its small towns, and as his wealth accumulated, he bought a ranch outside of Dallas. His office in the third-floor executive suite in Irving contained a Frederick Remington-style sculpture of a horse, which struck Schwartz as part of a style that might be called masculine, not so modern. It was true that Tillerson was not one to toss around French terms, yet he did seem comfortable in his own skin, relaxed, willing to hear different views. He was credible in industry circles, but more accessible and less defensive than Raymond when addressing skeptical or hostile audiences. How important were communication skills, anyway? The board was choosing a leader at an operations-focused, highly profitable corporation in an innately unpopular industry, not a game show host. Raymond knew that his board worried chronically about ExxonMobil's public image. Some of the corporation's outside directors had come to ExxonMobil from liberal university campuses or industries such as retail sales or telecommunications, where a corporation's public reputation was fundamental to the ability to attract customers. Raymond didn't see ExxonMobil or the oil industry as comparable. "The facts are, with the exception of the service stations, everything we produce has no interface with the public," Raymond told his directors at a meeting in Japan, as the internal evaluations of Tillerson and Galante neared their end. "Crude oil, natural gas, chemical products, the public doesn't know where it comes from. The only interface we have is the service stations." The retail gasoline stations, so ubiquitously visible and so familiar to Americans, returned notoriously low profit margins to all large oil companies. "If the goal of ExxonMobil was to have a better public reputation," Raymond continued, "maybe it should consider getting out of the retail business altogether and becoming a lower-profile, unabashedly profitable industrial company, with visibility more comparable with a company like DuPont." The public and politicians became inflamed when ExxonMobil reported its gargantuan quarterly profits, in part because many people thought those profits were extracted from their wallets at the retail gas pumps, where they stopped to fill up twice a week. When they drove to and from work or to the grocery store, ExxonMobil signs blared at them from street corners, reminding them of the corporation's presence and of the rising price of gasoline. Rather than choosing a new chief executive whose job would emphasize the rehabilitation of ExxonMobil before that skeptical, even hostile public, why not just retreat from view? This was not as radical an idea as it might have sounded, but it was not going to be the basis for the board's succession decision. After the succession contest was established, at the annual board meeting each October, when Raymond asked all ExxonMobil executives to leave, and then spoke to the directors about Galante and Tillerson. He always framed his report by saying that he could offer his views about the men's strengths and weaknesses relative to each other. He did not know, however, how strong a leader either of them would prove to be in an absolute sense, tested over many years and compared with other Fortune 500 chief executives. Raymond told the board that the most important quality his successor would require was toughness, the ability to stand up to governments, pressure groups, environmentalists, and special pleaders of all types. His advice was a projection of how he saw himself. Galante had supporters on the board until the final decision was made. Gradually, however, one board road trip or meeting retreat after another, the weight of opinion gathered around Tillerson. Raymond finally recommended Tillerson directly. He told colleagues that he felt he owed whoever followed him a firm endorsement so that he would not leave any lingering doubts in the minds of directors who had deliberated over the decision. ExxonMobil ended the succession contest publicly in 2004 by appointing Tillerson as president and the sole number two. In the summer of 2005, the corporation confirmed that Raymond would retire at the end of the year and that Tillerson would follow him as chairman and chief executive.